We're coming to you live from the future.
Whoa. We're in the future. But somehow also the past?
Who knows? I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Liz.
And you're about to listen to our podcast. And we just wanted to tell you a little bit of a little something. Going into season two, we changed our name, as you probably see on your podcast app, to Wisteria Gaze. But we just wanted to let you know, don't be shocked if you hear the old name, because we used to have an old name. But now we are Wisteria Gaze.
And you can find us on social media at Twitter at Wisteria Gaze, on Instagram at Wisteria Gaze _. Or WisteriaGaze.com.
So hit us up. That's
Hell
our new name.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Hey, it's me, the construction worker from last week, and I'm here to tell you that we're sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone. Get it for free in the App Store. I was Edie Britt.
I could tell, and I loved it. Download Overcast. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Mackenzie, right?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Guess what?
What?
This is the season one finale of Desperate Housewives.
Oh, my God. I feel like we just started this show yesterday.
Yeah, same. Liz, I'm so proud of this journey we've taken together. I cannot believe we have gotten to the end of season one.
Yes.
That's exhilarating to me.
I'm so wild that we were able to make it this far.
I can't believe. I'm so freaking pumped. And there's no end in sight. I'm down to keep talking about Desperate Housewives if you are.
Yes. I mean, like I told you when we started this, I'm committing the next couple years of my life to you in this project.
I am exhilarated to talk about this really, really great episode. This is a great episode.
This was a fantastic episode.
It was like one of the best of the season, which makes sense because you want to end on like the highest note.
Yeah,
possible.
You want to end on a bang.
On a bangity bang. And this was a banger.
Mm-hmm.
Liz, I love you.
I love you too.
I'm sorry. I dove into excitement. Is that too early to get
no,
this excited?
No, no, no. We should be excited.
I can't believe. Is there anything? I don't think we have anything to say before we jump into the SOTY, right?
Thank you, everyone. This is our first live show also. We're ending the season.
Okay, audience, yell.
Yes! Yeah. It's a Zoom live show.
Yeah.
That's a bit. It's called what we call in the comedy business is a bit. I just got worried that somebody would have been like, they did a Zoom live show. I wanted to go, and
yes.
I didn't want to make
anyone
upset.
I think
upset.
We should eventually. I think we should totally do some live shows. If y'all
be
interested in it.
We could just do our own little live shows.
We could just do a little live shows on the internet. You guys can come.
You can Venmo us both $1, and then we'll let you in.
We'll let you into the Zoom call. We'll watch episode for Housewives together. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Do you want to dive into this, SOTY?
Please. Please.
Oh, we're
can
diving
we,
in.
Instead of diving in.
What's up?
Can we just like casually
wade?
Like wade in the hot tub mm-hmm. because it's the last and I just want to be
right.
warm.
Yeah, let's just
and cozy.
Wade. Let's wade into season one, episode 23. Mm-hmm. This episode premiered on May 15th, 2005. It was written by literally everyone in the world. All of the main Housewives writers that we've gotten to know, most notably Mark Cherry, as well as John Pardee, Joey Murphy, Tom Speziale, and Kevin Murphy, who have written like a zillion
the
episodes.
The boys are back.
The boys are back in town. And it was directed by Larry Shaw, who has also directed like six other episodes this season. With hashtag Sondheim Watch, the name of this episode comes from the song of the same name, which I have literally never heard of before, in a Stephen Sondheim musical called Saturday Night.
Oh.
I'd never heard of it in my entire life.
Me neither.
And guess what? Another little extra fun fact. According to the Nielsen ratings in 2005, this episode drew over 30 million viewers.
Oh my God.
Like the premiere of this episode, May 15th.
I'm sad we weren't part making of the 30 million.02.
Yeah, it could have been us. 30 million people, and it became the most watched program of the night across every single network on television, as well as the highest rated episode of Desperate Housewives that time. And in 2009, TV Guide listed this episode as one of the 55 best television episodes of all time.
Oh, wow.
So this is a great episode.
Yeah, I mean, it is a fantastic episode.
I mean, the pilot is amazing. Yes. And this is like an incredible end of season. Like the bookends of this season are very, very
yes.
good. But I just want to give you that because fucking 30 million people watched this. That's fucking crazy
Hell
to me.
Yeah. I hope one day 30 million people listen to this podcast.
30 million people listen to this episode of the podcast the day it came out. Also, this isn't an also. This is just going into the episode. The previously on went all the way back to the pilot.
Yes.
I was like, oh, okay. They were kind of giving us in the previously on all the evidence that we sort of unlocked thus far.
That was nice. It's a nice little refresher because, you know, especially if you're watching this weekly, you can forget a little bit.
Yeah. And maybe even if you were the kind of person who fell off a little bit, but you were like, oh, I want to be around for the finale because everyone's watching it. Like I felt that way about Game of Thrones. I had never watched it, but when the final season was airing, I kind of just watched it because I was like, well, I want to be a part of this cultural moment.
I remember when the final season of Game of Thrones was airing, I worked at a board game shop, and you know how people do fantasy football?
Yeah.
They had like a fantasy like pool for Game of Thrones, like people who would die and like who
That's
would like
wild.
Yeah.
I never watched anything other than the last season.
Yeah,
which
I've
is
never seen it at all.
To me. Whoa. I really liked this opening scene with Mary Alice.
I did too.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
It was, or Angela, I guess.
Yes.
This is Angela. So we sort of see Mary Alice is giving us a monologue about how her life used to be before she died. And we go back to see Angela. And she led a life of quiet desperation.
It's the beginning monologue.
Yeah.
But like applied
but
to her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like it was her. It was applied to her in the beginning, I thought.
Yeah, you're
but
right.
But it's being used differently in this way because it's not her as Mary Alice. It's her as Angela.
Yeah. So this is more of Angela's life. She's no kids, just married to Paul. And right, I assume, is he still Paul or did he also change his name?
No, I think he's still Paul.
I love how only she changed her name. Yeah. She and the kid changed their name.
I don't know because we don't hear Paul's
other name.
I don't think so.
Surely he had to change it.
I guess.
Who knows? What do you think Paul's name was before he changed? Like, if you picked a name for that man, like who he might have been named before he was named Paul, what would you pick?
The first instinct was my dad's name.
Oh, no. My first instinct was Theobald.
Okay.
I cannot explain why, because it does not fit at all.
Mine was Phil, which is my dad's name.
Phil makes more sense.
Yeah.
It'd be very funny if he went, I've got to be something so different. Nobody will ever guess. Phil. And then he just took the two middle letters out, and he put A and U in and went, Paul. but she's a nurse, right?
Yes.
I assume like a rehabilitation center, maybe? Or is it like a hospital that has like a wing for rehabilitation?
I guess. I was very confused on that.
Gave no information.
Because apparently like each day was gray and meaningless until something happened. And it's Deidre, which is interesting because, and this isn't interesting, I just wrote how Mary Alice pronounces it like Deirdre when it's Deidre.
Deirdre. Yeah, because there's no other R in it, right? Yeah.
Anyway, weird. That's my fun fact. But basically, like, we find out that Deidre is somebody who has been to the rehabilitation, at least wing of the hospital or wherever Mary Alice is working.
Yes.
And she needs money, and she's, like, holding a baby, which we know is Dana or Zach.
Yes.
And
she looks bad.
She does. She's been using again.
Yes. And Mary Alice or Angela is trying to avoid giving her money straight out and is like, if you need baby food, I can just buy that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Deidre kind of gets angry and is like, no, like I could do it myself. I can take care of my own kid. And it just seems like Paul and Angela or Phil and Angela, they don't trust her because she's using right now, and they don't want to endanger the baby, and they don't want to be, I guess, liable for anything that might happen to her. So they're refusing to give her money until
Deidre says, "I'll sell you my baby."
The most reasonable option. Yes.
Well, I mean, Deidre gets into it a little bit, and she's like, "Listen, I know you can't have kids."
Yes, that's so news for us.
Yeah, we didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it sort of gives a reason, I guess, why they would have run away with Dana, because, yeah, if she can't have kids of her own, which I'm shocked they weren't already maybe going through an adoption process.
But yeah, sometimes adoption is hard, and especially to get a baby.
And maybe Paul didn't want a baby. I got the impression that, like, she was sort of felt stuck. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she maybe she clearly wants kids, because when she gets when she gets given that idea of buying Dana, she leaps at it.
I think she leaps at it, but I think it's also because she truly, like, looks at this woman and is like, "I want to give this baby a good home," and I don't think
she can.
She can, you know. Yeah. So she buys the baby.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote, "This tempts Angela. Brenda Strong is a really good actress."
Yeah.
She's, like, very good. Like, I don't know why. I'm glad she was getting
money for those narration checks. Yes. And, like, those flashbacks.
Cashing in those narration checks. I just thought she was really great in this scene. Like, it's like we don't really get to see her act a lot. So I just thought that was really great. But then it's a pretty quick cut to Deidre being rolled into the hospital having overdosed.
I'm pretty sure it's an overdose. Tilly's there. And
is she the lead nurse, maybe? She looked kind of more,
because she was like, "Go file this."
Yeah.
And blah blah blah. And Tilly knows that she's supposed to have a baby. So she's like inquiring to the cops. Where is that kid? I need to find that kid, because it's like they gotta make sure it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And the cops are like, we didn't find him, but when she wakes up, we'll ask where the kid is.
Yeah, and Mary Alice is like, oh no.
Shit sticks.
That's when she decides to run away.
She sees the calendar of Fairview, which was kind of dropped in the beginning. Tilly was like, "Yeah, I have family out there. Isn't it so idyllic?" And I kind of thought that was a fun way to connect why she even decided to go to Fairview in the first place.
And then I also have a question of, like, how did they get, like, false records for Zach to get him in, like, schools and stuff later in life?
I don't know.
We don't have to talk about that now, though. But
there's some holes there, but
yeah, it cuts to 3 years later, which is interesting, because I thought Zach was, like, 5 or so.
I think she said, well, maybe, how old was the baby? She mentioned
That looked like a 1-year-old at least.
Yes. Yeah. So then maybe he's 4-ish.
Yeah. But anyway, it cuts to 4 years later, or 3 years later, and she was desperate once again, which I thought was a really nice callback.
Real quick, can I tell you what my notes said? Because we see a quick shot of them moving to Fairview, and I wrote, cut to moving day. Angela and Paul are moving to Fairview. Baby Zach is in a cute hat.
Yeah, hat watch.
Hat watch with that baby. And I wrote, smiley face. And then I wrote, they look really happy. Sad face.
Because
it made me sad that their whole family is going to, like, fall apart.
Ooh, I'm depressed. Yeah. But it cuts there.
Yeah, to the 3 years later. And Deidre's clean, it looks like.
Yeah.
Deidre's showing up at the door. She wants her baby back.
But then it stops.
That's all you get for
That's
now.
That's all you get for now. And it cuts to 5 a.m. And the girls are getting calls.
The girls are... Why do they all have landlines next to their beds?
I don't know.
Was that a thing?
My parents, I think, had a landline in their room. Just in case it was like an emergency for like... I guess my dad's parents or somebody old.
Wild. Yeah, I feel like when I was growing up, we only had one landline. It was like in the kitchen.
We had one in our kitchen, and then we had like some cordless phones. And like there was one in our living room and one in my parents' room.
I just thought it was funny to see shots of every single one of them answering the phone next to their bed. It was like, what was that other episode where they were all told the same thing and we had to watch them each have the same reaction?
It was the one where the Hoobs died.
Yes, it was like that again. It was like we didn't need to see physically
every
all of them
single one,
but we did. I thought that was a funny choice to me. But I guess Danielle's called all of them to let them know that Rex had a heart attack in the middle of the night. And they rush to the hospital to get Bree, and they want to be there for her.
And can we put Susan's coat in the outfit watch?
Sure. Because I didn't notice that.
It's like long. It like kind of goes to her knees. It's like a trail coat. It's interesting.
I'll look at it.
But yeah, the girls are there to comfort
the girls.
Bree. We find out that Rex is gonna have to get a pacemaker put in, and they're all trying to reassure her and like be comforting. And Bree is like, I really can't have this comforting right now because I'm gonna fucking lose it.
And so Susan's like, I'll change the subject. And Susan gives the tea about the Hoobs' journal and how she found it in Mike's car to the ladies.
Yes.
And I think it was like kind of a funny, like Lynette's like, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. A little lilting piano as we cut.
And we cut to Zach running out of the Tilly's house. The Tilly.
The Tilly.
I'm turning into you.
She's just like more. Her nickname is morphing as we continue through the season.
I can't wait to see what it's going to be in season 8. When she comes back for one episode.
Tilly bop. Dap-dee-doo. I don't know.
But he's basically running away and he's just being a bad boy.
Little piss baby. He wants to stay in his own house.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but you said it.
I'll say piss baby. Yeah.
And Tilly's being up front because he's like, listen, I can take care of my freaking self. I don't need you here. My dad's going to be back anyway. And then Tilly's like, listen, your dad's not coming back. I talked with him and we both decided that it was best for him to leave you alone. So your dad's not coming back. And
peace. And fucking Zach is crazy little piss baby chases the Tilly down the stairs and
with a hockey
knocks
stick.
The shit out of her with a hockey stick.
He beats her. He doesn't just hit her once.
Yeah, because it cuts away and we hear the audio of him being like, where's my dad? And like slamming that's crazy.
I'm surprised she's not dead.
Yeah, she's not like young.
That made me very sad.
I completely forgot about that.
I completely forgot about it too, and I gasped.
He literally beat the shit out of her with a hockey stick. That did make me sad. Like Zach is, I mean, and we'll see later, he is off the deep end, and I feel like it makes me sad because I think that like he is bonkers bananas right now, but I also think that like the people that could have helped him didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of opportunity for his father to be a better father and to like actually handle his mental illness in a way that could have helped him, and he didn't. And I think that's why it makes me sad, because I think that's why Zach has gotten so bad, is because the people that had the power to interfere and help him in the way he needed just didn't. And so now he's gone too far, and how is he going to come back? I mean, we could talk about the end of the episode because it gets worse, but I'm just shocked how Zach is going to come back from this.
And then we cut to the Applewhites.
The Applewhites, yes.
We cut to Miss Applewhite.
Betty is her first name. I don't know if we learn her name in this episode, but
no,
I can give you a little spoiler alert. Her name is Betty.
Okay, that's what they call my grandma.
Betty Applewhite. That's a very like idyllic suburban mom 1950s housemaker name, Betty Applewhite.
Yeah. And basically Edie comes over to welcome them to the neighborhood.
Yeah, she's good at her job,
and she's also like curious because she's never sold a house over the phone before.
Yeah, she's like, that's weird that you bought the house sight unseen.
Yeah.
Like not a lot of people do that. And Betty was like, we could just tell from the advertisement. Didn't she say, I feel like she said that word really weird. It was exactly what we needed.
And then we meet her son Matthew, and I wrote in my notes, if Matthew is of age, him and Edie will fuck. That is my prediction.
Oh my god. So I don't think this is a spoiler. I think he is supposed to be like 18, but the actor who is, he's very handsome.
He looks like 27.
Yeah, he looks like late 20s, and I think he is supposed to be like 18.
Okay.
So he's supposed to in season 2.
The way he like is looking at Edie though, that's why I was like, if Edie would go for a young guy like that. I don't think she would. She wants somebody with more experience.
She wants more XP.
So like, I knowing that if he's supposed to be 18, I don't think they're gonna fuck.
Yeah.
But I was just saying, like, if he is, like, her age, like, I think that that would happen.
I think I don't know what the intentions were. Like I said, this is more season two stuff. Because without spoiling anything, he will be, like, put with, like, the teenagers group. And okay. It's, like, comical to me how much older he looks than all of them. Because, like, think about him next to Danielle or Julie or Andrew. Like, he looks like he has, like, 10 years on them. But he is, I think, technically supposed to be a teenager.
I'm thinking, like, he'll fit in with John Tucker.
Oh, yeah. Him and John Tucker both, like, really hot 18-year-olds. Bromance of the century. But, yes, that's Matthew.
And then I have more predictions about them, but we can talk about that in our season wrap-up.
Okay. But Betty is really dismissive, and I think Edie is getting a little weirded out by how much Betty is, like, not letting her come into the house to give her a tour. It's being really dismissive of Edie's, like, kindness, and Edie's like, well, you know, here's my card if you need anything. I wrote Edie's very good at her job and very sweet.
Yeah. Edie has a thriving business.
Thriving queen. And Matthew notes that there's a lot of friendly people in Wisteria Lane, mm-hmm. which I thought was stupid and funny.
And then we cut to a hilarious montage of Susan just leaving a bunch of messages to Mike being like, I think this is what's going on, Mike.
She's this girlfriend. Yeah. She's like, gets increasingly angry the more he doesn't answer his phone and leaves him so many voicemails.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she wants answers. It seems like the ladies also have connected the dots about Paul killing the Hoobs, which I'm kind of curious how those dots can get connected in the Hoobs' journal.
Yeah.
Other than, like, I guess she was blackmailing the family. I don't know if there's how many clues are in this journal, but apparently the ladies were able to figure out a lot also from the journals.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike eventually calls back.
Yes, Mike calls back. He says that Tilly gave him the journal,
mm-hmm.
and Susan wants to give it to the police, and Mike says yes, but then he goes, I know a detective. So maybe he wants to give it to, like, the dirty cop.
Maybe. That guy beat the shit out of him, though, didn't
or,
he?
Or, like, the PI? I don't know who he knows.
Yeah, he said the name, and I couldn't remember which cop that was supposed to be.
I thought he just said a detective.
Oh, I thought he said a name. Who knows? It totally did not register to me who he was talking about, though.
But then we pan to Mike, and he's driving a car, and in the back seat we see Paul tied up and gagged. And I wrote in my notes, we love a kidnapped Paul.
Kidnapping, honey. And then we see Gabby bringing Carlos some clothes at the courthouse. And at this point, because I hadn't watched the rest of the episode, I wrote, I guess she's going to plead, like he said.
There's a lot of flip-flopping with Gabby and Carlos just throughout the season. So I wasn't too surprised when this happened.
Yeah.
But basically, she did change her mind. But the reason she changed her mind is she says, listen, I'll do this for you. But when the baby wakes up at 2 a.m, you're getting it with no complaints. You are taking the baby for walks. You are doing this. You are doing this so I can have some semblance of a life.
Basically, you're going to be a single parent.
Yeah.
While I do whatever I want. And Carlos is like, sure. And then there's, like, a kind of a gag when she talks about how he's going to clean bottles. And he's like, I thought we were going to breastfeed. And she's like, if you can handle that, more power to you. Probably be like, Gabby, it's going to be coming out of your body no matter what. You have to do something about it.
I mean, she doesn't have to, like, physically breastfeed. She could just, like, pump
it out. Yeah.
Because she's going to have to pump anyway.
She's going to pump. Yeah.
But yes.
Us getting into the intricacies of Gabby's pregnant body. She's going to have to pump.
She's going to have to
pump. We should get it for her,
for her baby shower.
Baby shower. We'll get her pumps.
Yes. And then that was a pretty quick scene.
Yeah.
Because then we cut to Lynette at an arcade with the babies.
Mm-hmm.
And she sees that Tom is there fucking tearing up the air hockey table.
That's you energy.
Yes. I think I wrote, like, I want to play air hockey.
Tom playing air hockey reminded me of you. And she's like, hey, Tommy, why aren't you at work? And I cannot believe that he is only just now telling her that he quit.
Well, I mean, think about it realistically. I think this is the day after he quit, because he quit and then, like, Rex went to the hospital for his heart attack.
Yeah.
And, like, they found out that morning. So I think this is just the day after.
Do you think he didn't come home? Because he was still in his outfit. Do you think he, like, packed up his desk?
Oh, and then, like, maybe not.
And then, like, stayed up all night and then went to the air hockey place.
Maybe he acted like he was going to go to work today. And then he was like, I want one last day of just, like, doing whatever I want. that, because yeah. we'll get into what his he thoughts says. Are later.
Yeah.
But, like, it's pretty scary, in my opinion, the way he just, like, casually calls her out and is like, listen, like, you need to go home right now, or I'm going to say something that we, like, I regret.
Yeah, because he tells her, like, I know what you did.
Yeah.
I know that you told the, you know, Peterson's wife, and that's why I didn't get the job. And, yeah, he was very stern in a very scary way. I wrote, what? Yeah, I just said, I was like, I guess I understand he's upset, but, like, he's being really, really petty, mm-hmm. and they have 5 children and no income now, and I just am stressed out about it.
They have 4 children.
But they have each baby. Oh, that is only 4. Tom's a child. They have 5 children and no income. Why did I think they, I don't know why. I was like, the babies? I think of them as triplets, and then I'm like, the triplets and Parker, but there's only 2 of the babies. Who knows?
I just kind of call the babies just all of them.
Including Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. They have a lot of kids and no income. I don't know. I would have been so upset if I was Lynette. I would have been like, cool, I wanted... And yeah, we'll get into it later. But like, yeah. she wanted to keep their family unit together. And then he's like, I'm going to be an asshole.
But then again, it's like, if she... I don't know. It's so strange to think, because it's like she did it because she wanted him to be home more. And mm-hmm. it's like, why isn't that something you can bring up to like your partner about?
Yeah.
And like sometimes like you like.
I mean, she tried to, and then he was like, I don't care, I'm taking this.
That's
anyway.
Fair. I mean, he thought it was going to be better for the family because he would have been making more money. Yeah. And like it might have been something like he really wanted career wise.
I mean, clearly.
And like if it's just something that it's like you have to trust and like work with your partner to make it work. If he is going to be gone a lot, you have to like, I don't know, like.
Yeah, and I guess.
It's a balance.
Yeah, I just don't think they have it as a married couple. No. Like, I think that like, I don't think there's a lot of trust between the two of them right now, as is evidenced by all of the Annabelle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I just think that like, yeah, if she can't trust their marriage being able to work under different circumstances, like. Yeah, I don't know. I don't hate them together, but I don't have a lot of hope in this marriage.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's been rocky so much this season. I'm sad.
But then we cut to, oh, don't worry, Mackenzie, you're sad?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to cut to a very happy scene. Because it's Brex.
Brex.
They're in the hospital. Rex looks real bad.
He looks bad.
And... Bree starts talking about spring cleaning. She's like, I gotta like get the gutters. Cause he asks her, what are you thinking about? And she's like, oh, I'm just thinking about spring cleaning, like doing the gutters, cleaning the carpets. And Rex is like, and polishing our wedding silver. And she's like, how do you, what? It. And he goes, yeah, like our silver, you always do it last. And she's like, how do you know that? And it's like a very sweet and tender moment. Cause he's like, you think I don't pay attention to you, but I do. And she tells him why she does it last. Do you want to talk about it or do you want me to? Because you're sad.
I'm gonna cry. Yeah, she just gives this really sweet monologue about how much that silver means to her and how I think her aunt gave it to them maybe on their wedding day and was saying like, you know, when things get hard,
just look at this
and know that the best is yet to come. And it comes back later in a way that made me cry. So,
yeah,
I have a confession to make.
Okay.
We are... season finale of season 1, and in this episode, I know it's been building to this, but I think I just have to admit it to myself, to the world, to every Desperate Housewives fan listening to this podcast. I ship Bree and Rex.
I think I do
I
too.
Loved them in this episode.
They
and
were
later,
very sweet.
I cried. Yeah. I cried in the later part of the episode. I teared up with it. Just made I knew it was coming. And I just remember my first watch not caring about Rex, really.
Yeah.
And I don't know why in this more deep dive, I've watched his growth.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed it.
It's the thing is, like, the same with Mike. Like, we never cared about Mike. And then doing
we
the podcast, we fell
him.
In love with him. Because we're taking our time with each episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're actually looking at it. Like, we're actually, like, paying attention to it. Because we are taking notes and things.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, like, we're actually, like, paying attention and we're just, like, looking at the characters. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I really liked Rex's arc through this whole season. Starting out as a character I greatly disliked. And I'm at the point now where I feel like they have one of the stronger marriages, because they are the only couple I can see that through their problems, I think, can work it out.
Yeah, I can really, like, yes, I can see it now. And like, mm-hmm.
And I couldn't in the beginning. And I think that shows how good the growth has been between the two of them.
And part of this, when they're talking right now, and he starts talking about how he's so scared because they're going to operate on him. And he just wants to say that he's so sorry for like everything that he's done. And Bree says, hey, like from here on out, we're even.
Yeah. And she's like, you're going to be fine. The best is yet to come.
Yeah, she's
and
like, that's what she said with him. You're going to make it out of your operation because the best is yet to come.
I like teared up. I thought it was so lovely. And then they kind of, I love the exiting shot of them like laying in the hospital bed together. And I just, truly, I couldn't believe that I really like Bree and Rex.
Yeah.
I never thought I would ever say that or feel that. And then we cut to Carl. Picking up Julie, I guess, for the weekend. And Julie reminds Susan to feed Bongo. We see Bongo again.
I wrote that too.
Bongo still exists. Mike's dog.
But we do see Carl. Mm-hmm. Did you say that?
Yeah, Carl's picking. No, it's fine. Carl's picking Julie up, but then I jumped to Bongo because I got excited.
Yes.
Yeah.
We do see Bongo. And then immediately after seeing, I wrote Bongo watch, immediately after seeing Bongo, we see that Zach is in Mike's house with a fucking gun, with his mom's gun. It's the gun that Mary Alice used to kill herself.
Yeah, it's got
to
be, because he knew where that was. Yeah.
And I am so surprised Paul left that in the house.
Yeah. Why didn't he get rid of
that? No, I guess it's because, why didn't he take it with him when he was running away?
Who fucking knows?
I don't know, dude. I wrote in my notes, Susan should kill Zach.
But then I think, for me at least, it was a commercial break. But then it cuts to just later in the same scene, right? Like, Susan has been sitting with Zach for a while now. Because he comes in with a gun and he's like, sit down, you're not going anywhere. And then it sort of just transitions to, I guess, later in the same room. Because I wrote, it's very quirky music while Susan is sitting and Zach has a gun. And Susan's sort of looking around for some improvised weapons maybe she could possibly use. But then Edie knocks at the door.
Yes.
Saved by the Eads.
And Susan is allowed to open the door by Zach because she's like, listen. Oh, because Edie sees her and is like, why are you just sitting there? You like, stop pretending you're not home.
I loved Edie being like, if you weren't going to answer, you could have at least hid or like something like that. Like Edie just looking in the window and Susan like trying to be still as if just Edie's a T-Rex. And if she doesn't move, Edie won't be able to see her.
But so Susan answers and Edie is going around warning all the neighbors because Tilly was attacked in the Young household. And she's going to the hospital right now. And also, none of her workers are at the construction site today, and she's feeling pretty scared.
Can I hang out with you?
Can you have sex with me to take my mind off of it?
Can you hold me for a little bit while we're both naked, if that's okay?
I'm chucking her in the bucket now.
I don't know if I have another nominee,
Neither do I.
I was like, sometimes if I don't think of a nominee on my first watch, I'm like, I'll just feel it out when Liz and I are talking.
That's fair, yeah.
So we can see if we get any other ones.
We'll chuck her in the bucket and see if we get any other ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Edie being like, ooh, woo, Susan, can I have your jacket? And will you take care of me?
And Susan's like, no.
But then she tries to mouth
something. Yeah, like, help me.
Help me. And then Edie's like, what are you doing, Susan?
She's like, stick it in your what?
I thought that was pretty funny. I think Edie is so fucking funny. Yeah. I love it when she's on screen. But Edie just feels insulted.
And she walks off.
And Susan's like, fuck me. And Susan obviously immediately connects the dots that Zach is who hurt Tilly. And she's like, why did you do that? And he says, like, she told me the truth about my dad, and Mr. Delfino is going to kill my dad, and then I want to kill Mr. Delfino. And that's the end of that scene, right? It was like kind of a cliffhanger of a scene.
Is that when he talks about lying, or is that later?
I think later.
Okay. So, a little spoiler
for everyone. I didn't write anything down.
Yeah, me neither. And then we cut to Carlos in the courts. Mm-hmm. Gabby's on the stand.
Oh, God, this scene.
This fucking scene. I thought, because I don't remember, I thought Justin was going to speak up and say something.
Yeah.
But basically she does what she was told to. Mm-hmm. And the judge goes, listen, I don't think this is a hate crime.
Yeah.
And then John Tucker literally opens the door to the courthouse and walks in. leans over. I'm surprised nobody stopped him
from
talking to him.
He did a little shoulder tap that I thought was funny.
And he goes, he's like, God, what does he say?
He's
like,
you beat up the wrong guy.
Oh, he's like, you beat up the wrong guy. What? Do you really think, like, why do you think you had the only house on Wisteria Lane that needed to be mowed 3 times a week? And then he stands up and he walks back and just, like, stands by the exit. And Carlos gets up and looks at him. And so John Tucker is standing behind Justin. So he goes, I'm going to fucking kill you. And starts going. And the ADR of somebody in the background going, he's going after the gay. He's going after the gay guy. It is so fucking funny.
I didn't hear that one. I heard someone going, he's doing it again. I thought that was so funny.
And somebody else went, he's going after the gay guy. And like... It was so funny. Also, because, like, did nobody see this boy just, like, talk to him in his ear and then walk back?
Not. I also have, I have 8 million questions. So the last time we saw John Tucker, wasn't that the scene where Gabby convinced him to just let it go? And then he lied to Carlos and he let it go.
Yes.
What the fuck shifted
Maybe
between
Maybe he was
then
doing this out of
now?
Spite to get back at Gabby. Because his friend got beat up and maybe he was like,
that
Carlos should go to jail.
I was like, what changed? And you're right. Justin being beat up is probably what changed. Because I was like, what the fuck? And I mean, that was definitely some guts. I was not expecting from John Tucker to just flat out tell Carlos what happened. But I don't know. I guess it's out. But now I'm kind of worried about what's going to happen to Gabby. Because like once he takes his anger out on John, he's going to shift it to Gabby, and that just makes me nervous.
Yeah. So hopefully they see it as a hate crime.
Hate crime. He's going after the gay guy. I want that as my ringtone.
Yeah.
And then we see Mike is driving into a quarry, and he pulls the tied up Paul out and grabs a shovel. And Paul is trying to plead to Mike, being like, the hoobs was awful. Why do you care about this woman? Like, she was a bad person. She ruined lives. And Mike is like, this isn't about the hoops. Yeah, and then we get to the hospital.
Yes, and it's Rex and the doctor. So Bree's not in sight.
Yes.
And the doctor's telling him about, like, your potassium levels when we first came in were unreasonably high. And Rex is like, yeah, you made me stop eating bananas. And the doctor's like, but they keep shooting up. So it has to be something you're ingesting. And Rex is like, I don't know how that can be. And
he's like, who prepares your meals?
And Rex says, Bree. But Bree wouldn't do something like that. And then the doctor fucking brings back the salad
the onions, the full circle.
That
was the pilot, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was so fucking funny where he's like, didn't this happen before? She gave you onions knowing you were allergic.
But that was honestly an accident.
But like, who the fuck is this doctor? Is that allowed? Is this allowed for the doctor to walk in and just insinuate murder? That's just, that feels very weird that the doctor just is like, hi, I'm going to talk to you about the fact that I think your wife's killing you. But also, I forget that Rex is technically a doctor.
Yeah.
And so he knows the charts. He's like, I want to see my charts. I want to read them.
He's like a surgeon or something.
I think
he is.
Yeah. Isn't he like a cardiologist or something?
Yeah.
Which is ironic.
And basically, like, he snaps at the doctor and tells him to leave, but leave the chart because he wants to read it.
Yeah. And he doesn't want to believe that Bree would be doing that to him, especially with the conversation they had this morning. It was so lovely and good.
And then we cut to Lynette and Tom. This is what we were talking about earlier. They're having a conversation in their dining room, and literally I think this is all it's kind of interesting because Tom is gonna be, so basically the scene is Tom and Lynette. Tom is like, I'm going to be a stay-at-home dad. I'm making the decision. You're always better at advertising than me. Like, you miss the game, right? And Lynette is like smiling kind of,
thinking about
her past, the glory days, if you will.
The glory days.
And she's like, we should talk about this. And he goes, no, I made the decision. You're going to work. I'm a stay-at-home dad. I think it's interesting because he's kind of been threatened with this the whole season, like Lynette being like, I'll just go back to work and you can stay home with the kids. And he's been kind of like, oh, no, let's do something else. Like, that's been used as a tactic against him. Kind of like the spanking, I feel like.
Yeah.
And now it's actually happening, much to both of their surprise.
Yeah, because, like, you know, she asks him in the beginning, she's like, so fun day? And he's like, yeah, the most in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they, when they get into the fight, a line that I thought was interesting where she was like, I didn't tell you to quit. And he's like, yeah, you did, but you made damn sure I would never go anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that was like an interesting line to me, because I was like, yeah, I guess that's what she did. But also, I think that he needs to realize, like, his own talents are not to the level of someone who was going to ever advance as far as he wanted to.
Yeah.
From what we've gotten as an audience, I think that they are, like, very purposefully showing us that Tom isn't as great as this job. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
I mean, I, for one, I think this is weird of him a little bit. Like, I thought the way he was acting was kind of weird, but I also am pretty excited to see Lynette return to the workforce.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish that means Natalie Klein would be around. But, like, I don't know. Like, I think
she might be. I don't know.
I think he's being wild right now. But also, I do think that I am excited for that shift.
Yes.
I, like, as an audience member, I'm excited going into season two with the shift of this sort of role reversal mm-hmm. for Tom and Lynette. Like, I'm excited what that means for season two.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm not unhappy about it.
No.
But it is wild how these two fight. They just sort of fight and then get to weird places.
And then we cut to Zach and Susan. She's going to get him a little sody pop.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, listen, why are you doing this? I know about Dana. I know about your sister. And he's like, stop. Like, they're lying to you.
Yeah, he's like, you don't know shit, Susan.
I'm Dana.
Yeah.
And, like, he fucking lays out all the truth.
He lays the plot. He's like, and I don't love this word, but he says, he's like, my mom was some junkie and yeah. Mary Alice and Paul kidnapped me and they changed my name. Da, 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 like, and so he just, like, lays all the tea out for Susan. And he's gets really, really angry because he says he feels like everyone lies to him, which is true. Mm-hmm. He says, like, everyone his whole life has lied to him. From his parents to
Julie
to Susan,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I don't know. Like, I am very stressed out about Zach. I think that he is just a kid. Even though he annoys me, I'm like, you're still just a kid.
Yeah.
And it makes me sad. Like, this like kind of breakdown that he has in the scene. I also think this actor is a very good little actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this kind of breakdown he has in this scene, like, it makes me sad because, yeah, everyone lies to him and he's just being, like, completely, like, gaslit by everyone in his entire life. No wonder he's losing it, you know? And yeah. Susan wants to reason with him, but I just don't think he can be reasoned with right now.
Yeah. And then we cut to a quick scene of Rex in the hospital. He's done reading his chart. He looks really bad. And he starts writing something on a piece of paper. Now, I don't know if he writes more on this piece of paper, because all we see him write is, I understand and I forgive you.
To Bree.
Yeah. I part of me hopes that there's a little bit more on there. But I don't know if there will
be. Yeah, because we don't see it again, do we?
Season because two. It shifts. Bree is polishing the wedding silver.
I'm sad.
There's a phone call.
This makes me so sad. I knew. I mean, like, of course it would happen. Of course that call would come the moment she's polishing the silver.
And she gets a call, and it's the doctor, and he says Rex has passed away 10 minutes ago. And I'll talk about this later.
Okay.
Well, I was like, I'll talk about this, like, at the end. But yes, like, Paul passed away 10 minutes ago.
Paul.
I wish. Rex passed away 10 minutes ago. And she, like, finishes cleaning, like, the last piece of silver. She puts it away where it's supposed to be. She straightens up the, tablecloth. And I think this is, like, two things. I think it's a combination of there being nothing too clean and her finally being able to not be able to bring herself too clean, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of both.
And I think that the direction direction was really great in this scene, because it's sort of like I could feel where it was going as it was pulling away from her. I was like, oh, Rex's chair is empty.
Yeah, she's like staring at his chair
and just wailing,
yeah,
with this grief. And it was,
you hear some of the wailings right before like we pan away from her, like actually starting to break down finally, and then it goes to their wedding photo.
I teared up.
Yeah,
I
so thought
that
I.
I mean Marsha Cross fucking killed this acting wise, and this that grief, that I think it's just a lot of emotions that Brie keeps trapped inside, and I think that this was just the straw that broke the camel's back to let those floodgates open, and she's just letting this emotion just rip out of her because she just lost the love of her life,
yeah,
in an instant. And the last, I mean, she did get to say goodbye to him, sort of, but it wasn't a goodbye. It was, I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm.
So she never got to really say goodbye to him. It's just really heartbreaking. I like truly, like, I couldn't believe I teared up because I was like, I can't believe I care so much about these characters. I love this stinking little show.
Yeah. And then we cut to Paul and Mike. Can I just say,
God, this episode is so good.
Yes.
I'm looking and I'm like, fuck, this episode is so good.
Can I just say, the real quick before we get into the meat of this scene.
Oh, the meat is coming.
The hilarity is
she's
coming.
I see her down the street. She's coming, honey.
The fact that it's like Paul being like, you ever have to kill anyone for real? And Mike being like, yeah. And then Paul being like, oh.
I thought that was funny.
I just think it's very fun.
That was funny.
But, like, Mike wants to know why Deirdre died. Like, she had problems, but she didn't deserve death, especially, like, what made her deserve death at the hands of the likes of you, Paul?
And it seems like Paul had no idea that Mike knew Deirdre. Like,
yeah.
He throws that picture of them down, and he's like, she was sad, but she had a lot of problems, but, like, yeah, why the fuck did you do it? And we go back to the moment we left earlier, where a clean and sober appearing Deirdre knocks on the door of Mary Alice and Paul's home. And
yeah.
There's this, I loved the monologue here, because Mary Alice is like, when, as it's transitioning back to that scene, how Mary Alice is like, my husband began to tell all of our secrets, the secrets I died to protect.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I got chills just
I
now.
I did too.
But basically we find out that Deirdre tracked them down. She says that she never told the cops anything that happened, and she wants her baby back. Like, she says, I'm in a very good place now. It's been 3 years. I want him back.
Yeah, and Mary Alice is like, I'm not letting him go.
Yeah, you didn't raise him. You're not his parent. We're his parents.
And the ladies start fighting, and Paul is sort of like, hey, calm down. But then things escalate physically, and Deirdre grabs a fire poker and knocks the shit out of Paul.
Yeah, and Deidre's like, I will go to the police, and she starts walking. Oh, she like says a line to Mary Alice that Mary Alice said to her in the beginning of the show, and I wish I could remember what that freaking quote was.
Oh, I can't remember either.
She truly says something.
That,
about like
ticks Mary Alice off.
Yeah, and she like tries to push past her, and Mary Alice grabs a knife and stabs her in the stomach.
That was so fucking sudden.
Yeah,
and I like I obviously I've seen the season. I knew Deirdre was gonna die. I forgot how it happened.
Yeah,
like
me too.
I completely forgot about the scene, and the noise and the image of Mary Alice stabbing this woman was so shocking. Like, you know, I mean, the whole season's built up to this revelation, right? Of like what happened to this character. And I gasped. I like fully gasped when Mary Alice did that. And Deirdre falls to the ground and gasps for breath as she's bleeding out. And Mary Alice and Paul just look completely shaken.
Yeah. And then it cuts to Mary Alice getting the toy chest, mm-hmm. and being like, I need to borrow your chest, honey. Go back to bed. And then she comes back and basically like Paul is like, what are we gonna do? And Mary Alice says, well, they're pouring the concrete for the pool tomorrow, so we're gonna put her in this box and make sure she stays there. And Paul is like, she's not gonna fit. Well, Mary Alice says, we're gonna make her fit. And then
great fucking shot
is at the top of the stairs.
Yeah, like it's like this amazing pan where it's like we're seeing Paul, but then it shifts and you see that like Paul's face with Zach behind him, and Zach, and the shot of the dead body with Paul and Mary Alice just like looking like ghosts up at this child. It was a really cool directing choice. Mm-hmm. And Zach saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, and he was getting flashes of this memory. Like, he remembers the blood, but I guess he just didn't remember what all was around it.
Mm-hmm.
I found this online, and I'm pulling it up so you can see it. They were talking about, like, I found online that the ABC executives didn't want, like, Mary Alice to become this, like, murderer. So they tried to make that, like, it prompted the writers to make Deidre, like, violent and angry in order to, like, justify why Mary Alice had to kill her. And I don't know. I just find that to be kind of weird.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of shitty to people with addictions. Because also, Mary Alice checks her arms and sees that she was clean. And so it's like, I don't know. It just feels weird that they were like, you know, I understand that it was like a different time, I guess. But like they didn't want Mary Alice to seem like a murderer. But she is. Mm-hmm. She was. You know what I mean? I don't know. I found that to be interesting that the executives of ABC
mm-hmm.
made them up the violence of Deidre as a character so that like people would understand more why Mary Alice did what she did. Which is interesting. Also, I have something that I want to ask you about.
Sure.
And it's interesting because I don't want to ever give this man any points because Paul annoys the shit out of me. But he didn't, like, super do anything.
No, Paul didn't do anything.
Like, that's what kind of was shocking to me is, like, seeing the situation and seeing how he just sort of supported Mary Alice.
Yeah.
But he didn't, like, lift a finger. He was ready to comply. He wanted to, like, do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he got sort of whipped into this like tornado of Mary Alice's violence. I just found that interesting that he is a character I dislike so much and how his guilt I think is like lesser than, I don't know. I found it interesting. I think
he might feel guilty because he didn't do anything about it.
He could have turned Mary Alice in if he really wanted to, but he loved her, right? It was mm-hmm. his wife. I don't know. I just was shocked at how, and I guess like in my brain, I didn't even think about it. Because I knew the ending going into the season. But yeah, how I guess they do implicate that Paul has a bigger hand in the situation throughout the season. They like implicate to me that Paul is a bigger deal in this like crime. But he really didn't do anything.
Yeah. And then we snap back to now. And the only thing Mike says is, Deidre had a kid. And then he leaves.
It's got to be his, right?
Yeah, it's got to be his kid. Zach's got to be his son.
I mean, it's got to be because there's no way Deidre was with somebody else. Around the time she was a drug addict, mm-hmm. she was with Mike.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, Zach did not get the hunk genes.
No.
But that's a wild revelation that Zach is, I mean, I can't imagine what else the show is pointing us towards other mm-hmm. than Mike being Zach's father.
Yeah.
That's fucking wild to think about, like, this whole season. They really haven't interacted that much. No.
They interacted maybe, like, once or twice.
Oh, and think about the very Greek tragedy implications of a boy unknowingly killing his father. It's Oedipus, right? Mm-hmm. This, like, sort of, like, it's very cool. And, I mean, we'll talk about it, but we don't even see how it ends.
Yeah.
Oh, it's wild, the cliffhanger of the season.
Then we cut to the ending narration.
I wrote, Paul is acting his fucking face off in this moment. Yeah. Too, as well. And I wrote, how was this the end of the episode? There's still so much more I want to know.
I wrote, this is a good ending, setting up a lot for season two. I cannot. And then my very last two notes are, I can't believe you would end it like this and do this to me.
Yeah, because we get the end of episode monologue and she's speaking about the women she left behind, all brave, determined, and desperate. And we see that Lynette is looking at her kids, wanting to venture out but afraid she'll miss the babies when she leaves, and Gabby, who wants to get everything she wants but also isn't sure what she wants. We see that Bree wants life to be perfect again, but she must realize it never really was in the first place. And then we see Susan still with Zach, wanting a better future but not able to escape her past.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really cute photo of all of them together, and I really loved this monologue. She was like, I cheer them on and I love them so much, and I like hope that they'll get the things they're looking for, but not all of them will.
Yeah.
And I thought that was another, like, I think I mentioned this a while ago, another kind of omniscient moment that makes me feel like Mary Alice is telling this from the future.
Yeah.
like that she knows what will happen to these women, saying not all of them will get the things they want.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a sad end, like a sad note to end on. And the last thing we see is Mike arriving home
and walking into the house.
I can't believe that was the cliffhanger of the whole season. I cannot believe
it. Imagine waiting a whole fucking like year.
I would be so mad. Liz, we just watched all of season one.
I'm so excited because I've not seen anything past this season.
I am really, really anxious and excited to see how you feel about season two as someone who is going to be watching it for the first time.
Okay.
I'm so excited to go on this journey with you.
So much.
How did you feel about, I mean, I guess we can get to it more in our season one wrap up that we're going to be doing. But I think this was a great season of TV. I'm super excited to get into, we can talk about it more in the wrap up. I feel like that's more the place for it. But this was a great fucking episode.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it.
I loved it so much.
And I love you.
I love you.
Hell yeah. So we have a couple things coming.
Yeah.
Right? So we're going to obviously do another In Memoriam.
Yes.
For Rex.
Next week, right?
Yeah, we'll do one next week. Next Monday, why not?
Sure.
So check our Instagram. I usually give it a couple days for people to listen to the episode. And then I'll post so you can submit your favorite Rex moments.
Yeah.
So that we can remember Rex Vandekamp. He's actually like the one first character I think I'm actually sad we've lost.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see that. And then next week, we're going to release a bonus episode where we are going to talk and discuss about the Vanity Fair issue from 2005, because I bought it on eBay forever ago. So we're going to do a little bonus episode for y'all called Vanity Fair View.
And then the week after that is our season one wrap up. Should we talk about like what we're planning on doing for it?
Or yeah, sure.
Or should it be a surprise?
I don't, we could talk about it. Why not?
You want to talk about it first?
I guess. Well, are we going to, we're going to film it, right?
We're going to film it. So we're going to have a video recording.
It'll
as
be on
well
the podcast feed.
Yes. We'll have it up on the podcast feed, but we're having a video of it because is that when we're going to launch our Patreon?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 2 weeks time, we'll be launching a Patreon where you'll be able to watch the video of our finale, and you can watch us sip on some margaritas and stuff
And we won't give too much away about that, but there's going to be lots of fun things you can get for supporting the show.
Yeah.
And we're excited about it. Yeah. So just give, you know.
We can talk more about that when we're in the wrap up. Yeah. And we can just go through kind of like what our Patreon entails.
Yeah. And so stay tuned for that. You can support the show a little monetarily if you'd like, and help us keep the lights on of this podcast.
Help us help support our website.
Basically.
Speaking of websites, where can we find each other on social media?
You can find Desperate House Dykes on Twitter and Instagram at Desperate Dykes, or you can also go to our website, DesperateHouseDykes.com.
And on that website, we have a link to our merch store. And if you find yourself wanting to subscribe to our Patreon when it launches,
it'll be
the video will probably be wearing our merch.
We'll probably be wearing our
merch. I'm saying probably, there's a little asterisk
ordered shirts for Scream, the movie series. And if those come in, then we're going to wear those.
We're going to be wearing our semi-matching Scream shirts. Yes. But if they don't come in, then we will be wearing our Desperate House Dykes merch. And if you want to find us personally, you can find me on any form of social media at The Pigeon Wizard.
And you can find me anywhere at Mackenzie Wilkes.
Oh, my goodness. Do you love reading but hate books, Mackenzie?
Yes.
So do I. And I find the best place for me to do some reading without having to open up a big, heavy book is going to the review section of iTunes.
I was like, what the fuck is this? I didn't know what you were getting at.
It's another ad. It's for Audible.
I literally thought it was an Audible ad. And I was like, did I not know we had another ad? That was confusing. I loved it. Yeah. Oh, my God. I love reading reviews.
The reviews are great because it's not just a big, heavy book, you know?
Yes.
And we love reading ads. They help people find the show.
Reading ads?
Oh, I'm losing my mind. We love reading reviews. They help people find the show. And usually at the end of every episode, we have a little question so that you can choose to answer it in your review or not, just to get the juices flowing.
Fully optional.
Yes, fully optional. And last week was sex toys.
Yes,
what would
last
be
week
your
was sex toys.
Desperate Housewives branded sex toy.
Yeah.
And this week, I think, should be
Okay, I have a question.
Okay.
It's kind of sentimental.
Okay.
If you answer our question, our optional question in your review, I want to know, what was your favorite moment of Desperate Housewives season one?
Oh, yes. I was hoping it was going to be that when you said it was sentimental.
Yeah. What was your favorite moment of either our podcast or the season?
Yeah.
This season? Let us know what your favorite moments of season one were.
What was yours, Mackenzie?
I think my favorite, first thing that comes to my mind was when you and I both lost our shit at Susan at the Valentine's restaurant, falling backwards. That was a really funny moment for me with tears in my eyes laughing at that. That was probably my favorite moment.
That, I mean, I don't want to be the same because that also, I think, was my favorite moment.
Yeah.
But I think my other favorite moment was how much time we got to spend together making this little podcast.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I think that's my other favorite. That's only my second favorite moment. Is how much time we've been able to spend
together. That's so sweet. So when you leave us a review, let us know your favorite moment of season one of Desperate Housewives. And also, I haven't said this before, but if you don't have like an Apple device or you don't use Apple Podcasts, there's also a really great website called Podchaser.
Yes.
That you can use reviews on as well if you have a Google device and would like to still
leave a review.
So we're around. Leave reviews. Oh, and also, Lesbian of the Episode.
Lesbian of the Episode. We forgot to do it. Oh, classic.
We only had one nominee.
Yes, Edie.
So Edie.
I guess Edie's the lesbian of the episode.
De facto, there weren't a lot of lesbians in this episode. It was pretty lesbian light.
Yeah, but we're going to be having something special that you all can also
vote in.
Should we post it when this episode comes out, or should we post it like, it'll be posted sometime between now and the next couple days.
Yeah, because I assume we're going to announce the lesbian of the season at our season one wrap up. So you all will get to go onto our social media and we're going to have like probably a form of some sort made with brackets. We're going to do some math and some calculations. And basically you are going to get to vote for your favorite lesbians of the episode this season. And we are going to tally until we get to one single lesbian that encapsulates the entirety of season one.
So really, if you like our social media but don't pay a lot of attention to it, start paying attention.
You gotta go vote for Lesbian of the Episode and Lesbian of the Season.
We need you to vote for us.
For us? We're not involved yet. Next season, maybe we'll get nominated.
Maybe.
But I am very looking forward to see who you all pick as the season lesbian.
I hope it's the Birkenstocks.
I don't know who I'm rooting for. I'm probably rooting for Edie.
Probably.
Because I love her. But I also think
to be Natalie Klein, kind of.
I kind of also think Natalie Klein would be fun.
But it's up to you.
It's up to
you. Out of all of our winners, it's up to you now, unless it's a tie.
And so, hey, use your power and vote.
Vote.
But only for lesbian. No, I'm just kidding. Vote for politics as well, please. Yes. Get out and rock the vote.
And I think there's only some, just like a little something to say.
What's the little something to say?
I love you.
I love you.
Yeah, that's right. I said it.
Thank God. I love you. Thank God.
And to everybody else out there, stay juicy.
Stay juicy.